Welcome to Autism Knows No Borders, a podcast where people connected to autism inspire change and build community. Together with the Global Autism Project, I'm your host, Rachel Harmon, a professional with over a decade of experience in the field of autism services, outreach, and advocacy. Have you ever experienced a flow state when using music or visual arts as a creative outlet? Or maybe you've been inspired by someone else's work. If you like music and art, stick around because today's episode is a roundtable discussion where we talk about all things creativity, facilitated by community moderator Danielle Terrell and featuring autistic self-advocates Andrew Bennett, Stephanie DeKramer, and Christina Kasperson, as well as fellow members of our online global autism community, Melissa Battercher and TJ Larum. Among other things, we discuss how creative projects can enrich lives, different outlets for creativity, interpretation versus improvisation, using creativity to accentuate autistic strengths and develop areas of need, challenges of self-promotion, and overcoming imposter syndrome when showcasing work in front of others. In this episode, discover what's possible when you let the creative juices flow. And now I present you the Global Autism Community.
Hi, I'm Christina Kasperson, and I'm a late diagnosed autistic, and I'm an artist, and I have a company called Barna Buddies, and I raise money to help autistic individuals get service dogs, and also I do free commissions for autistics who are raising money for their dogs. So that's what I'm up to.
Hey, I'm Andrew. I'm from Houston, Texas, an autistic self-advocate and board-certified assistant behavior analyst, and currently work as a transition specialist in Lee College here in Baytown on the east side of town.
I'm TJ Larum, recently a PhD candidate at Simmons University, BCBA and regional director for Total Care ABA. And I'm excited about this conversation today because I'm also a musician, music educator, performing artist, and the like.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steph. I am a data analyst for Cognizant. And outside of my day job, I'm a professional wrestler. So there's lots of creative things going on there. It's two different worlds that merge together. And an autistic self-advocate. Very happy to be part of this.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melissa Battercher. I am an art therapist and counselor working at a couple locations. I work with Bloom Art and Integrated Therapies, as well as Ignite Child Development Services in southeastern Wisconsin. And I am excited to be part of this conversation.
I'm Rachel. I'm the director of training here at the Global Autism Project, and I also host the podcast. Very excited for this conversation too, because I took some courses in music therapy, and I just really understand the power of creativity and expression and what it does for a person's life.
My name is Danielle Terrell. I'm a SkillCorps alum and Global Autism Project team member. I've been a professional in the human service field for several years now, working with individuals from 2 to 87 in different areas of life. I absolutely love being an advocate and traveling all around the world, public speaking, and really just networking to build an even larger community. I'm very excited for this topic today. Art, music, and being creative is something that's very close to my heart and something that I've revisited over the last couple of years as my schedule changes, looking into different avenues for myself and for others. To start off this conversation, if anyone wants to jump in and share a creative project that either they're currently working on or something that they've worked on in the past, feel free to also share the backstory, the inspiration to this project, and any type of creative outlet that helps enrich your life and brings you joy.
I've been doing some things. I've been illustrating different dogs and making t-shirts and selling them to raise money for autism service dogs. I've also recently started illustrating some funny ones, and I'm starting to put them on Etsy. So I haven't sold any yet, but I'm excited about that. And in the past, I did illustrate some comic books for NGOs in developing countries, in China and in Zanzibar, which is part of Tanzania, and cooperated with the Ministry of Education there for health education. And in Thailand and China, I was a preschool teacher. I taught preschool English, and I used a lot of songs to teach the kids. I would write songs, and then I would illustrate them with cartoons. I have a website called adorableenglish.com where I have some of those. And since the pandemic, I didn't do that occupation and I didn't work on them very much. But recently I've had the desire to, I have a water cycle song about a raindrop that falls through the clouds and becomes part of the water cycle. And the song is kind of like the song that never ends, because it's like the water cycle after the raindrop. It falls and it goes through the river to the ocean. It evaporates and it becomes part of a cloud. And then the whole song starts over because the water cycle starts over, and it's a lot of fun. So I've finished all the illustrations for it, and I've been practicing it on the guitar and singing it, and I'm hoping to record it soon. I have recorded about 5 songs like that that are on that website that I mentioned. And it's been a really fun way to connect with students, and I hope in the future I'll get to do that again. And also a song about nap time, because nap time can be, if you're a preschool teacher, getting kids to go to nap time can be difficult. So this song that I made about nap time, though, it is maybe too stimulating for nap time. It's about all the fun things that we're gonna dream when we take our nap. So I'll have to let some teachers use it and see if it's a good song for right before nap time, or maybe we sing it in the morning and get all our excitement up. And then when nap time comes, we'll be ready with the song.
That's exciting. I love how when you're talking about these experiences, your face is completely lit up, and you can tell your passion just through your tone. Thank you for sharing.
Christina, you'll have to share some of your content. Doubly, you could also take some good data on whether or not that song riles the kids up before nap, or you might have a sleep aid on your hands there. You never know. I'd love to, piggyback off what you had mentioned about music. And of course, I'm extremely biased as a musician, but it's always been a big passion of mine as a music educator as well to provide those experiences to all persons. So And kind of going back to Danielle's question regarding like old projects at this point in time, it had to have been 2017, which, you say it aloud doesn't sound too long ago, but 2024 is getting on. Chartered, composed, choreographed, for what it's worth, a inclusive drumline for exceptional students back then in Minnesota, which had to have been the first drumline per se. I'm certain it's not the only percussion ensemble of sorts for exceptional populations, but yeah, just seeing the impact that music can have on really just anybody, and how it those experiences are so much less available to a lot of persons if it's not an immediate affinity to music, or just the availability of having instruments in and of themselves, like drums ain't cheap. But yeah, just that was brought to my mind when you kind of brought up the music and the students and everything. That's good stuff. Again, you'll have to share your content.
I think something that can be quite nice if you do something creative and if you're trying to make it a passion, a hustle, is to have something else that's creative that feels like you're not going to get judged for it. So recently I've been doing flower arranging. It's a little bit blurry, so you can't see. But the good thing about flower arranging is even if you get it wrong, even if you mess it up, it's still going to look pretty because it's flowers. Whereas if I wanted to go out to Hobbycraft, that's a store here in the UK, go buy some paints, there's a good chance that I'll either have to concentrate really hard, or I'll judge, be like, oh, this is terrible. Why did I bother? I'm stuck at this. All the negative self-talk. Whereas something like flowers is kind of nice. You're not going to get judged. Whereas with the other creative pursuits like wrestling or being a musician, like you guys, I can imagine there's that feeling of, oh, is this as good as the last thing I did? Am I peaking? Is this good enough? That all that. So I think, although it's amazing that we should have creative outlets, I wonder if anyone else has a creative outlet, kind of like flower arranging or sketching or something that isn't really something they're trying to turn into a hustle, but it's just something they do for them.
Well, it can also depend too, Stephanie, because sometimes we start on doing something that could be a hustle, but at the time that we start doing it, it's just for you. And that's often been the case for some things that I do as a creative side. So the two main things that I do right now creatively, one is Cooking Beyond Limits, which is an online cooking class operation, and also just an overall informational newsletter about the autistic experience of being a cook, which is, of course, influenced by one of my biggest special interests. And I intend to start offering some live classes, group events, and even some recorded classes. But one of the other things I'm focusing on right now while I'm just starting is putting out some content where I just talk a little bit about maybe there's a category of dish that's particularly easy or friendly for an autistic to cook. Like, well, one of the ones that I was about to write is like, oh, some mashed potatoes is like something that you can put an endless amount of riffs on and make it customizable. And you can make it very sensory friendly by just putting a few ingredients in, or you can light it up with absolutely everything. And that is very sensitive to pretty much any audience, but it's inspired by the fact that I'm able to combine ingredients in different ways or see threads of history in dishes from certain places. And coming from another special interest that I had when I was younger, like geography. And with me also being having traveled to about a dozen countries, it's just a passion and special interest of mine to do that. So for me, it's also self-fulfilling, but it could also turn into something creative and being hustle. I started writing as well in about 2016, inspired by other writers that I had read from childhood, like J.K. Rowling, E.B. White, Roald Dahl. I could name those as primary influences of mine over the years. And I just grew to start, I would listen to, and this might be something that you find interesting too, TJ, that I would listen to instrumental music and see the song titles and start to sketch a storyline that the music might be telling with the titles of the pieces as the chapters. And I think, okay, what? How can I fill in the gaps here and depict what this might be actually trying to say? And I have at least 10 of those sitting around in various stages of completion, and some of which I think might be releasable. And some of them were like, yeah, these are okay. But I've been able to demonstrate a particular kind of writing that I think is specific to me, where it's based on something that exists, but my own interpretation of all of the sensory details that are in a particular piece of music. But sometimes I've been able to come up with a story of my own. And they usually resonate with a specific type of or category of themes. And one of them was specifically written from an autistic point of view. And that was my own experience with a relationship that went really wrong and led to me questioning my identity as an autistic person, and went through a very hard time for quite a few years. But then near the end of the story, you see me start to turn my life around. And then it actually has the beautiful like resolution to it that I don't want to spoil, but that really brought a sense of closure to something that lasted several years. And so I also write that for myself, because that brought a lot of catharsis to something very personal in my life. But I could also see it connecting with other people, wherever they're at, even if it's just on the idea of, oh, how do I pick myself up from something really unpleasant and unfortunate that happened in my past? How do I learn lessons from past relationships? Or how do I learn to let go of grudges or all of these other themes? And I think that being able to universally connect with people on that level makes stories that might be written from a particular point of view or even from my particular perspective as an autistic very relatable.
That's great. And I love how your creativity just continues to bloom throughout the years and how you take different influences from other people and experience and travel. Going back to like your cooking, have you ever incorporated some like new dishes that you might have learned from other countries into your repertoire? Or is that something that you're thinking about?
Absolutely. And I think that the places that I've actually been tell particular stories. So some of the countries I've been to include Costa Rica, where I spent 6 days solo. And that was a totally adventure, totally for myself. And I had a particular goal from that trip. And I just felt like so in touch with the locals. I got to see Coldplay in concert while I was there too. And that ended up giving rise to one of my greatest self-advocacy speeches as well. So I take all of those positive memories from the country and put them forward in the dishes that I present. But then I also try to specialize in that country. So I've flown through the Netherlands, so I wouldn't say that's a country I've been to, but hopefully soon. And I find that I can pick up on those because they're also, they conjure a particular atmosphere where it's like a lot of this is like chilly, cozy, wintry foods. I was in Kenya about a year ago also on a trip with you guys, and I try to specialize in some of those dishes that maybe nobody's ever heard of. So sometimes it's maybe somebody already knows this a little bit. Maybe sometimes it's a little out of left field, but it brings a new cuisine that maybe people haven't heard of or really explored. And it brings particular memories in, and it's personal to me. And it just goes overall with my theme of adventure.
What's your favorite Kenyan dish?
Githeri.
And can you describe it to us?
It's like succotash in the U.S. So it's beans and corn and a bunch of mixed vegetables just simmered for a while. And that was my favorite dish that I had when I was on my trip to Kenya. Still to this day, I still remember when we had that. That might be one that I teach in an online class because it's accessible. It's pretty nutritious. It gets a lot of vegetables in your stomach and it's vegetarian and vegan. It works really well for a lot of people, and I can sell those advantages when I promote that particular class or recipe. And I can tell a particular story of what happened when I actually ate it.
Full circle. Melissa or Rachel, do you have anything to share about something that's maybe inspired you, something through either music or art that's enriched your life, and anything that's meaningful to you that you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So growing up, I played classical piano. And, you know, for me, it was always a escape and kind of like my own therapy with if I was ever going through something, I knew that my piano would be there for me. And it was very personal. So I like played recitals and competitions, but I would always get anxious playing in front of other people. I didn't like that pressure. And, you know, as I got older, I played in bands and stuff. So I learned to appreciate that more interactive side of experiencing music with other people. So that was fun. But I've kind of noticed a pattern with myself, with music, and with art. So I've been taking some oil painting classes, and I've noticed that with both forms of art, I'm kind of like a perfectionist. And so I want to play the music that I'm reading, or I want to do something realist with the painting. And the challenge for me is like getting as close to the model as I can get. Like, how realistic can I get it to look? And I've thought, like, am I using the brain in a different way that someone else who's a bit more free with improvisation uses their art? Like, my husband is a musician too, and he, you know, he does solos and he improvises all the time, but he doesn't read music. And so his brain, I don't know if that's the right side maybe, where he's more of just free-flowing and he writes his own songs and he's amazing at that. And with art, I haven't yet experimented with like just a blank canvas and just expressing myself with what's going on inside. Maybe it's just something I kind of need to break out of, and it's like a restriction I'm putting on myself. But I like the detail and like that meditation of just zoning out into a project and just kind of getting lost and not thinking about anything else but what it is that's in front of me, whether it's the piano or the paints. Can anyone else relate to that with like the different ways of expressing or, you know, getting close to something else?
See also flow states. Yeah, there's the, I've heard it referred to as like the Nirvana state of drumming, but that's another talk for another day. But being fully immersed into something, I I think you could probably find a lot in the literature on flow states, but I can totally relate to your husband's approach to music. I put in the chat, but I learned to write music before I could read it. Why? Not sure, but found that that was actually one of the quickest ways because the ink on the page ended up being a little bit more aesthetically driven than it did sonically. And then I'd play it back and be like, oh, that's cool. And then over time, the association kind of occurred there. But talk about being immersed, sitting down sometimes. And I remember these days because it was over a decade ago now, but spending 5, 6, maybe even 8 hours writing with a couple of pots of coffee, some snacks. But that was the extent of it. And to most, that sounds tedious. I'd imagine just spending that much time doing anything. But to me, it was everything.
Yeah, I think we do have to break out of this feeling of needing to perfectly imitate something else. I know when I was doing piano, it was just trying to copy exactly what was there. And I'm amazed when people do, jazz style, just improvising. And like, I found when I did a little bit of guitar, because I was just playing guitar, playing chords on guitar. And just from playing the chords, you kind of do your own melody in your head. Whereas with piano, I felt like stuck in a box. And I'd be interested in Andrew in your cookbook, because when I've cooked in the past, I had to follow the recipe exactly. And if I didn't have nutmeg, I would be like, well, this is ruined. I can't do this recipe now. Let's order takeout. Whereas now, having the flexibility, well, maybe I've got cinnamon, being able to break and bend the rules doesn't come naturally to me. And I imagine to a lot of other people, especially here in this community. And I'd love to get to stage where you're breaking a little bit more outside the box and not being able to just follow the rules as much, I guess, with art. Does anyone else relate to that?
I do want to touch on that because there is an example from very recently regarding cooking that might speak into that particular situation. I certainly was a lot like you when I started to learn to cook a lot. Like if I couldn't find the ingredient that I needed and the authentic ingredient, like I would just spend 50 minutes tracking it down. Sometimes I'm like, you know, we don't need it now. If it's just too much trouble because, hey, life's short. I got a lot of other stuff to do. But there are some situations where you can be pretty flexible. So this weekend, my grandma's in town right now as we speak. So I just would cook different things that were very special for her since she doesn't really get access to that where she lives now. And I made this Moroccan lamb stew. And there's a particular spice blend that goes into it. And assembling this spice blend is called Ras El Hanout, is like art. It means top of the shop, literally in Arabic, and you can have dozens of spices in it. I intended to make my own blend before I left to go over to my dad's house where we're staying. And then when I got there, I realized I forgot. Okay, we're just going to throw that out. We're going to use what we got and we're going to mix it up. And we got like 8 or 9 spices together. And that was fine. And it paints a similar canvas and it's just fine. It's minuscule enough that it doesn't make that big of a difference. Now, maybe if it was a major difference, great. And sometimes if it's something that really means a lot to me that I have the exact ingredient, then I will go for the effort of tracking it down. So when I first made githeri, the corns and bean dish, beans and corn. Okay. I used the variety of bean that the Ecuadorian partners said this reminded them of, because that's what I could find. Then when I ran into an East African market down on the west side of town, just randomly, I just walked into it. It had opened the previous day. They had the bean that I remembered from Kenya in stock. I am like a kid crying in a candy store going through there. And now I take the effort and the expense to use that particular bean because it reminds me of something special. And so that matters to me. But I can be flexible on some other things too. Like if I don't have the exact spice blend, like I might mix it around a little bit. If I don't have the exact same red or gold potatoes, doesn't make a difference. So you may, if you're trying to expand, figure out like, oh, where are the boundaries that you can break and what are things that are just really important to you for your own creative expression. And I do have a lot to say on flow states too, but Christina, you can go.
Oh, I find that for me, for art and music, I go more with instinct, and I'm not very good with technical things. I'm self-taught with those things. I did learn how to read music in school because I was in band, but I wasn't always good with reading some of the rhythms. But if I heard them, I could play them right afterwards. And I grew up in a family where we sang a lot, but nobody was professionally trained, but we felt like we had permission to sing because of that. It was so normal. My father loves to sing, and growing up, he would always be sometimes embarrassing us in public. He would just belt out some hymn or something, but we grew up singing a lot. And so I always kind of felt empowered to experiment with music and to write my own music. And I grew up in a church where just regular people from the congregation would go up to the front and sing a song that they had been inspired to write. So I felt very free to do that. When I got in a real music class, when I was in band, I kind of felt constrained by having to read music and everything. And then with art too, I'm self-taught, and some of the ways I do art don't play well with the way art is technically or professionally taught. Like I feel like I'm using a sense of touch a little bit when I'm drawing cartoons, like kind of feeling the volume of things in my mind and putting it on paper works a lot better for me than looking at something and trying to copy it. Or some of the ways taught that people use to teach perspective they don't work good with my mind. So with those things, I'm almost maybe too right-brained or whatever. I find it hard to go back and forth from left brain to right brain. And I'm just in the instinct. But with the recipe, what Stephanie was saying, I relate to that. If I'm not as comfortable cooking, and if I have a recipe, I want to follow it to the T and to the letter and use measuring cups and everything. So it depends on the creative endeavor for me, whether it's something that I'm going to feel more expressive or I'm going to, I think confidence has a lot to do with it and what you're comfortable with. Yeah.
I remember when I was growing up taking piano lessons, I never wanted to learn the more classical music. I wanted to learn the TV theme music and all the Disney songs. And I never wanted to go to a recital and to perform, even in band. Like, I just hated practicing because I just wanted to do my own or learn on my own. And I'm able to self-teach myself in many different areas. But as I grow older, part of me wishes I had a little bit of that structure so then I could just walk up to a piano and play something. But I think it's interesting how as creatives, we maybe strive a little bit to draw outside the lines and to march to the beat of our own drum when it comes to being art and creative. Andrew, did you want to add something else?
Yeah, I think that's a good transition into something else I just thought of, and then I'll wrap around to the other thing. I have also invented my own original dishes, sometimes based on the way that I see different cultures coming together and sharing maybe a shared ingredient or a cultural heritage that might be in the same place at the same time. Or sometimes it's been a misadventure. So one, I might draw on particular flavors that I find often where I live. So here in Houston, we have a heavy Mexican influence, a Cajun influence because we're close to Louisiana, and we have Vietnamese. We have a lot of Vietnamese people actually here. So one of the first dishes I remember inventing was a Vietnamese stir fry with Cajun and Mexican influences in it, and using ingredients you'd find in all of those places. And then throwing in little pieces of each culture that are unique. And it's this is a Houston dish. We don't really have a regional cuisine in our city specific, unlike Chicago or New York City or Memphis or some of these other bigger cities that have their own signature things. So I like to do that as a reflection of my roots and things that I grew up eating. And I've also invented a dish based on a misadventure. And I was in Lisbon this summer, and friends and I decided we're not staying out for this concert. We're not going to even get anything to eat. We're just going to go walk around and find something to eat. But we couldn't find it, and we ended up at a shawarma joint. And we're like, why are we eating at a shawarma place in Portugal? It was we wanted to immerse ourselves in the culture. And then I looked at this, and I thought, that is very similar to this steak that we're eating, this steak cutlet we're eating everywhere else. That's a traditional fast food dish here. So in 5 minutes, I had a new dish. And my friends were over there being a little bit like, why are we eating this? And I'm like, I've got this idea that would not have happened if we hadn't had this spontaneous thing go wrong. And I made lemonade with those lemons, as the saying goes. Now, sometimes that instinct just comes when you see something and you're like, you're in that state where you're like, I can pull something out of my hat. Sometimes you just get inspired. And sometimes art just writes itself. And where that comes from is kind of up to you, because I can remember. So I also write poetry, and there were two occasions on the trip, or even while coming back later on and reflecting on particular experiences on the trip, where I felt something wrote itself and I didn't even have a hand in it. One time I was in a church and just trying to write a subject about a poem about a particular book that really inspired me going on this pilgrimage. And while we were sitting down and praying in the church, the whole rest of it just came out suddenly, and I felt a warmth that's just impossible to explain. And while I was in an aquarium, the Lisbon Aquarium is like one of the biggest in Europe, maybe you've actually seen it, I just had this idea of capturing the serenity of the seaside and seeing all of these animals in harmony and feeling like that was a reflection of the beauty of creation. And I just wanted to depict that, but I just got started on it before I actually went home. And then while I was in the middle of a conference, I suddenly started to get ideas for another stanza, the rhyme scheme, all of the different words that I can use, how it's going to end. And it just comes out and it's like, I cannot stop writing this no matter what. I logged out of the conference. I even had to write it down while I was stopped at the place I was going next before I went to the store. Like, I couldn't not write it. Like, it was like something inside me or another force or a higher power was telling me this has to come out and be written. And then when it comes out, boom, it's absolutely gorgeous. And that's a way of connecting spiritually with yourself or with others and with whatever reality you believe in. And I think that that's something that everybody appreciates.
Yeah, thank you. That was really great. Have you guys ever identified anything that somehow, like, something creative helps with your strong points, but could also help further develop our challenges? Like, maybe before, with being more flexible and like trying new things with recipes, or what do you think?
Well, I write a lot of music, and sharing that, I found that I want people to listen to my music, but I found that people, they click on videos a whole lot more than music links and SoundCloud and those kind of things. So I make music videos all the time, not real music videos, but just videos of me playing music. And it was very intimidating, but I've become very comfortable with it. It's funny because I'm not comfortable with making a video of myself talking. But I think that through that experience of, you know, that I'm comfortable playing music on video, I will eventually be more comfortable to speak on video. And through music, I did facilitate a songwriting workshop online. And I also did two live music sessions on my Facebook, which doing live can be intimidating, but I've been able to do that. So I think that desire that you have as an artist to communicate something and to connect with people, it kind of pushes you to do things that you wouldn't normally perhaps do, and to get something out there. You do expose yourself to a possible rejection or critique when you do that. But when you create something, it's a way that you want to connect with people.
Do you feel like that was also the same with going from making art to selling art? Because I think sometimes, like, when we make things and we want to put it out there, even if it's just like sharing it on social media for other people to see, and then taking that next step, will people buy it? Is it worth it? I feel like there's part of imposter syndrome that can come with that.
I think so, definitely, that for me, it's difficult to do that. It's difficult to self-promote and then to put things out there. I think it might have something to do with being autistic, but you don't always have a feeling or an instinct when it comes to doing certain things. I find myself relying on guidelines a lot. Like, I'll hear people say, well, if you have art, you have to put it out there. You have to put yourself out there. And then I'll hear other people saying, oh, I don't like these artists. They're always spamming me with things and they're always promoting themselves, you know? So it's like, I don't have a feeling with when to do that and when not to do it. So for me, I sometimes do have feelings about some things, but I have to learn to do things when there's no feeling there, because there's usually, you know, you don't always have a feeling that this feels like the right time to do something, or this feels like the right time to share something. So, for me, it is a big step with selling things. And I like to share something once and then, oh, I shared it, I'm done. But when it comes to selling something or starting a business, you have to be consistent and consistently promoting, sharing. And it takes discipline, and it's something I'm still learning.
100%. I massively relate to that. I get imposter syndrome. I've noticed, that knowing that instinct of when to mention something without feeling really awkwardly or braggy about it. I was speaking to someone the other day. If we see like a tissue box, on one side it's orange, one side it's blue, and we're having a conversation with someone, and say someone's talking about something that you have some experience in and you want to mention that, unless they directly ask you, you're not going to drop in, oh, well, I was on this committee and I did that, because it feels weird. We don't have that. Like, if you're not directly talking about it, it feels weird to sprinkle it in the conversation. And I do think that comes naturally to a lot of people. It does not come naturally to me. I know other people on the spectrum, like my friend Jenny is like grade 8 flute, right? And we were talking about flute at the wedding. And then some of the other people who were organizing stuff, we're like, oh, well, you know, is she good at flute? I'm like, yeah, she's grade 8. Didn't she tell you? No. And it's like, unless someone went up to her and said, Jenny, what grade are you at flute? She wouldn't respond with that. So if we don't put ourselves out there, I think that word, put yourself out there, I think for us, it means sprinkle it in conversations. Yeah, it can feel really awkward and deliberate. But if you don't do that, people don't realize how good you are. When I'm in the locker room planning matches with other girls at wrestling, I don't always mention how many matches I've had or how much training I've had. And I actually have a tendency to put myself down. I'll say there's this move called the monkey flip, which you do with the character. There's like it's a really cool flipping move. And then if I see some other girls talking about it, I'll just mention the one time I did it wrong in a match instead of like the 99 times I did it perfectly fine. So it's a fine line, but I do think we tend to err on the side of just never talking about it or wanting to bring ourselves down by mentioning, oh yeah, I hated piano as a kid, rather than like, oh yeah, no, I still kind of play it now for fun, you know.
Hello, Rachel here again. Would you like to share your own perspectives by participating in roundtables like the one you're listening to? Join our online Global Autism Community, a safe and judgment-free space where all kinds of people connected to autism regularly discuss important topics like autistic identity, dating on the spectrum, coping strategies, and many, many more. We'd love to see you there at community.globalautismproject.org. And now, back to the roundtable.
I think, you know, this imposter syndrome person, it's always there, right? And something we like to talk about at the Global Autism Project when thinking about leadership and being examples for other people, right? Like, why can't we talk about our strengths? Because, you know, when you do, it gives permission to other people to talk about their strengths too. And maybe they can learn from you or you can learn from them. It's just about sharing, right? Like, I understand there is this wanting to stay small because you don't want to like make other people feel bad. There's that fine line, but can we just create a space for everyone to feel comfortable with that, to share their art, to share their music, or whatever they're working on creatively?
I think that part of what comes to my mind with this imposter syndrome, I know, Rachel, you had talked a little bit before about perfectionism with taking on a new hobby. And I think sometimes it feels like we're, not wanting to share with other people what we're creating because we aren't yet satisfied with it, or we feel like we still have so much improvement to be made. Whereas to somebody who hasn't pursued that hobby or hasn't dabbled in it, or somebody who maybe doesn't paint from a reference, what you're already creating is so beautiful and so much farther beyond what another person may have even thought to create. And vice versa, you might look at something that is completely different from your approach to that particular hobby or pursuit in a creative way, and you can have so much appreciation for it. But if it isn't exactly what that person creating it was going for, they might be less likely to share. Because I know I ran into that so much with my own art making. And I always say that I'm a hobby singer, which means I sing in the shower by myself and don't let anybody hear me, because it's not up to par with what I think it should be. But somebody else overhearing me might have a different idea. And just like Stephanie is saying, if we don't share that information, nobody else is going to even know that that's something that we're interested in or something that we're able or willing to pursue. And I'm just so inspired by all of you talking. I know I was just kind of listening in for most of it here, but it's such a beautiful thing when you could just allow yourself to create and let it be whatever it's going to be.
Other than sharing on social media, do you guys have any places in your community where people can just go and share? One of the things with my current position is I love finding new programs that showcase people's artwork, or maybe it's like an employment specialist that's working specifically to showcase art. Any places like that in your community?
I have played my music at a coffee house before. It takes a lot of effort though to, you know, invite everybody and bring all your equipment and stuff. It's so much easier for me to just sit down in front of my iPad with my mic in front of my iPad and put a song out on TikTok or Instagram than to do that. But it was fun. It was neat that all the friends and family that came out to support me. So,
open mics. I always recommend them. I like hitting them up myself for the most part. And I hope this is, I could say this generally speaking, mostly inclusive and welcoming from my experiences. And if they're not, I don't know why they'd call themselves open mics. It's like an unwritten exclusive mic at that point. But that said, I think that's one place that is a good place to just start. Or honestly, I know a unifying theme across people are saying is kind of just doing art for yourself, not just doing it for the exposure or like getting your stuff out there, as it was said. But realistically, if you enjoy it, do it. I've been saying that to myself when muted, just saying like, if it's an artistic endeavor, you'd be a fool not to spend your time doing it.
And with my experience doing open mics, I think it's been very beneficial because I'm in front of an audience that specifically has an ear for what I'm doing. And this is usually me reading either a poem or a chapter or two of a short story. And I've had an ongoing relationship with a critique group in Durham, North Carolina, who'd started doing this virtually and during the pandemic, and like they've still been going on virtually. So anybody can join from anywhere. And I've experienced both feeling like, you know what, I'm content with how things are as they are, but also listening to people's feedback. The benefit from being in a group like this is, well, at an open mic night, you might just go share and people will compliment you and really connect with you. But at a critique group, people are going to give you some feedback on what it actually, how it actually made an impression on them. And sometimes, I mean, if I have a particular tone to a particular poem, like if it has a meditative or spiritual tone to it, and some people just aren't into that and they say, no, well, I'm not really getting that part because this isn't how I see the world. I'm like, okay, well, that's sarah, nothing I can do about that. We just have different views on life. If somebody has a question or a criticism that I don't personally agree with because of the way that I've written something. So one time I wrote a poem that had the title Keep Fall in Love, and people thought that was confusing because it should be falling. But then I explained there's a particular ways in that. Well, it was also the title of the music I was working with, so I found a way to make it make sense, where it's like, you're continuing to descend further and further. Love is not a place where you just stop and you've arrived. You're continuing to go deeper into it. And that's part of the adventure of it. And then some of the other people in the critique group were like, well, that makes sense to you, but the other people aren't going to understand that. I'm like, well, there's a certain truth to that. Like, maybe it's possible to make that clear, but in this case, you know what? That's as clear as I can make it. Some people will get it. Some people won't. It is a slight tweak to something that people probably already understand. So it's a little out of the familiar enough that they're like, what does that mean? And then some people, if they get it, they're like, that's really cool. Right. Third category is people have legitimate criticisms that I can actually do something about. Now, I started out as a writer, writing things with very little dialogue. They were all introspective inside one person's mind, very much based in sensory depictions of internal struggles and interactions with the outside world and sensory stimuli, while following them on an inward journey of maybe self-discovery, of redemption, maybe overcoming a big obstacle. But they weren't clicking with everybody. They had mixed reception because there were so many dense metaphors and language that people saw that as you're just showing off all of your skills with language, but it's just obscuring the actual story. And if you take all of that out, what story do you actually have? And also, I'm not really getting a flow of this because there's no dialogue. And at first I thought, you know what, that's just me because that's my style. It's reflective of being autistic. And I'm like, can I really write dialogue? Can I write depictions of real life social interactions? And over time I thought, you know what, maybe I actually can. I started adding some little nuggets into the story when I was editing it. Like, okay, well, that makes sense. The story was written kind of the way that it was still, and it still stands in that particular style. But in my more recent stories, I've taken to writing more dialogue and sometimes full-on conversations, and maybe like, but sometimes they're going to be mostly introspective scenes, and it might even depend on what mood I'm trying to create. Like in one chapter, if I'm trying to create a very introverted and dark and desperate mood, then there's going to be very little dialogue, or where there might be dialogue ordinarily, it's just like vague recollections of events. And I hope that that comes across in the tone that I'm trying to achieve versus there's a lively conversation and people are actually interacting with me. It's really just depends on what you're trying to express. And again, if people don't get it, then they don't get it, but you just write it the way that makes sense for what you're trying to create. And you do listen to other people's feedback and you have a choice to accept it or reject it. Like you're saying, TJ, it's your art. You got to decide.
Thank you so much. We're going to wrap things up. I feel like this conversation could continue for hours and hours. Thank you, everyone, for participating and listening in.
And thank you, Danielle. Thank you so much for taking this on and facilitating. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for showing up and being here and sharing.
Thank you, everyone.
Great
Bye.
Seeing
you all.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Take care.
Great seeing you.
We'll see you all in the community. Are you a self-advocate willing to share your story and educate others? Or a professional seeking to hear directly from autistic voices and improve your practice? Or are you a family member hoping to support and empower your loved one? Whatever your connection to autism is, we'd love to hear your takeaways from this episode in our online Global Autism Community, where hundreds of people from all over the world come together to support each other and know that they're not alone. Join us today at community.globalautismproject.org. Let's work together to transform how the world relates to autism. Thanks for tuning in to Autism Knows No Borders. Take care.